Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another exciting adventure here on Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallward. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, first of all, last week, the bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee voted to require the Pentagon to release a public report on UFOs. It also is planning to implement new rules on and regulations on how the DoD shares information about UFOs. Basically, Congress wants to be part of the process. The Office of Naval Intelligence would have to submit a report within 180 days with specific details on different aspects of their investigation. It is unclear, however, how much light that would actually shed on a phenomenon which is still pretty much unexplained. Reports are to be submitted in unclassified form and so are likely to be available to the public. Also on UFO news, a new report by SatelliteInternet.com reveals that Idaho has the highest number of UFO sightings per capita in the country, no doubt due in large part to their famously low levels of light pollution. So, if you want to believe, best hit the potato fields. Moving now to conspiracies, a new report from the American News Pathway Project shows Americans divided and skeptical when it comes to news about COVID-19 and also everything else. They generally view information as exaggerated or misleading. A majority, 64%, say the CDC mostly gets the facts right about COVID. Only 30% says the same about the Trump administration, and only 44% say the news media in general gets things right. Not a lot of trust floating around. Gets things right on COVID. Also, in incredibly stupid news, last week, Justin Bieber slightly adjusted his hat while making a live video on Instagram. Almost certainly unbeknownst to him, one of the commenters, out of literal thousands of commenters, said in a previous video, "Touch your hat if you were a victim in Pizzagate." This has brought to life new attention to Pizzagate theories on TikTok, of all places, with Bieber's videos translated into multiple languages and given captions like, all caps, proof of Pizzagate at last. Back to you, Chauncey.
Okay.
yeah, that was my reaction.
The Pentagon requiring the Navy and military, the Department of Justice, to go through them. I mean, the Senate, that seems very like they're closing it up, not opening it up. It seems frustrated with what they put out, and they're basically saying, you don't get to do that no more. We're gonna close that up.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that, but they're also requiring that more reports be made than currently, so... It's kind of unclear how this would go in practice, and it's also like I don't know what the Senate's motivations are. It's really not clear. I know that generally in every time a branch of government does something, the Senate wants in and passes some resolution saying, "Hey, we have to be part of this process."
That does make sense though,
because they just want to be part of everything.
Right. And to be fair, they probably should be.
Right, because they, you know, do represent the people and so on and so forth, and it's not like the Pentagon necessarily does. I mean, you could argue that they do, but it's certainly not direct, you know, the people aren't elected in the Pentagon, so.
Right. So I guess it'll remain to be seen as to if this opens things up or closes them up more. I guess it won't be seen if it closes them up more because...
That's true.
We'll just never hear about it.
The thing is, though, like, whether they require more reports or not, like, no one knows what these things are. So, like, how much is this really going to change the actual level of information the public has access to? I don't know. Because I think right now it seems like the government is as clueless as we are, but, you know, maybe they're just acting.
Yeah, and it puts me back to my initial belief that I was a little shocked that the military would put out, hey, we don't know. And I'm assuming that the Senate is saying, like, what are you doing? You can't say, I don't know, to the American people. So that's kind of my assumption there.
Yeah, well, that would make sense.
I'd be stuck in my own belief system.
Who knows? No, I think that makes more sense than anything, but it really is just unclear what they're trying to do.
And then Idaho, you know, a hotspot for UFOs.
Indeed.
You know, it'd be interesting if there were social statistics to track with, to go along with where these hotspots have been, you know, political belief systems and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Idaho, so I'm not trying to put anything on them. I mean, I'm one of those people in the United States that lives on a coast. And when I think of Idaho, I think of potatoes, and that's really it. But right. So I'm not trying to put anything on them, but it would be interesting to see statistical data for belief systems, attitudes, and stuff like that to go along with these hotspots when they come out.
Yeah, so I don't know. It is a very conservative rural area, but also, I mean, are conservatives more likely to see UFOs in cities? I really doubt them. I think it's just, you know, you can see more of the sky.
Right.
The physical
fact
of the situation.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily political leaning that I'm interested in. It's sort of, you know, faith in things, faith in religion, all sorts of stuff would be
an interesting
parallel to run alongside that one.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some studies about that, like, if you're not religious, you're more likely to believe in UFOs or cryptids or whatever. I think, which is sort of in some ways counterintuitive, because you think, okay, maybe some people are predisposed to just believe in whatever, and those are the people who are believing in everything, and some other people are predisposed non-believers. Mm. But it's more like no human ever is naturally predisposed to be skeptical. We are all predisposed to believe in something, and it's just a matter of what it is.
Right.
You know, we're superstitious and crazy by nature.
Right, and, you know, I mean, you heard it here first. Bigfoot's a Satanist.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But we don't hold that against him after our interview with the Satanic Church, you know.
Right.
Probably perfectly nice.
COVID news, what do you think? What is your take on the information coming out of all of these places for COVID news? This has, of course, been a hot topic between my wife and I, and I assume it's a hot topic around a lot of dinner tables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes
how
to the
accurate
CDC,
is it?
When it comes to the CDC, how much belief are you putting in?
Personally, a lot, I think. I think very early on, there may have been some things that were slightly inaccurate, but like at this point, I think we actually, it sounds like we have a pretty good handle on the biology of the virus, and that at any point in the pandemic, like, who are you going to get your information from? Information that's incomplete is better than, you know, zero information and I'm just going to make assumptions, right?
Right, so, I agree with that.
I think that's
my same view on the CDC. I agree that as long as they're saying it's not complete information, then they are giving
right.
us the complete information.
Yeah, so I think they're honest. I think they have the expertise it takes to have anything valuable to say, and I think, you know, they're trying. And I think you can't ask much more than that. I think given those things, it is reasonable to behave as though what the CDC is saying at any point in time is fact.
Now I can assume.
Just stay up to date on changes.
I can assume and probably shouldn't even ask, but what's your faith in the information coming out of the White House?
Well, I'm not going to say they're saying a lot of stuff that's false, actually. It's just they really haven't put out a lot of statements. I think a lot of the criticism of the White House has been how very, very hands-off they've been for this entire process.
Yeah.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest returning, Mike DeMonte. You've been on once before, but this is your third book. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. This is the third Punk Rock and UFOs book, Punk Rock and UFOs, Stranger Than Fiction. And I was always a fan of trilogy. You know, it's some of the best movies of trilogies, you know, Star Wars, the Dark Knight trilogy. So, yeah, wanted to end the series on a strong note.
Does that mean that your second book is the best?
No, this one's the best.
Well, you compared it to Star Wars, so it's like...
I know it's an unpopular opinion, but Return of the Jedi is my favorite. So in this case, the third one is definitely the best. It's, I mean, the other two are good, but this one's substantially better.
Yeah, I agree with Return of the Jedi, I have to admit, because it's just my generation, you know. I remember wanting... I had this friend who lived next door, and I'd already seen the movie, and I had gotten in trouble, and they were going to go see it, and they invited me, and I ran home to ask my mom if I could go, and she said no, and I, like, had to hide behind our carport while crying and bawling, yelling to them that I wasn't allowed to go because I didn't want them to see me crying because I couldn't go to see Return of the Jedi. It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm grown up now. I'll get over it. Counseling. Nothing counseling can't handle. All right, so, you know, just a cover for our audience to let them get to know you and your purpose behind this. I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, why punk rock and UFOs? Why the connection between the two?
So that's a great question. I think that's always a great conversational piece, too. So the first book looked at cryptozoology and anarchy. It was looking at kind of UFOs, paranormal, zoology, all that as like an underdog science, sort of. So I kind of looked at, you know, kind of growing up in the punk rock scene and how it's definitely an underdog subculture. And there's also that rebellious nature. And in this case, you know, people who believe in the stuff that, you know, we're into, you know, we rebel against certain beliefs. Just where the punk rock aspect comes into it. It's more the belief system, the attitude, as opposed to like the music.
Right, so the coming from the underdog, the DIY attitude, you know, and you're right, because even now, you know, we'll talk about UFOs specifically, but paranormal in general. And, you know, we'll be all surprised that the mainstream even takes it seriously for a second, you know, but still we have to accept that it's a second. It's not... Mm-hmm. You know, it's in no way, even with the Navy stuff, you know, you would have thought that would be a much bigger story. Well, if we knew that was a Russian jet, that would be all over the place, but we don't know what it is. So we're all like, oh, whatever. You know, it's like, it's a weird attitude to take towards it. Go ahead.
Yes, we're actually, but like, luckily at the same time though, you know, the Navy stuff, you know, they had large outlets reporting on it, you know, Washington Post, CNN, New York Times, Fox News ran it. So it was like all these large outlets were running the story. The History Show Unidentified kind of went a little bit deeper into the story, and then New York Times did some follow-ups, even though it took a long time for those stories to kind of come out. Because usually in the past, we didn't see many follow-ups in terms of like big UFO stories. So it was really good that, you know, that they had more articles coming as well. And then also recently, you know, with the Army admitting, hey, look, I'm sorry, with the Pentagon saying, yeah, these videos are real. They were ours. You know, we gave them the okay for release. I mean, that's – Pentagon basically said, yeah, UFOs are real. They didn't say what they were, but just them admitting they were real I think is huge. And, you know, I think they strategically dropped it during the middle of COVID, thinking it was going to get buried. But for that day, it was actually a big story. So I think people were just sick and tired of, you know, COVID stuff and – and they saw this and they're like, oh, wait a minute. You know, this is like, what else in 2020 are we getting? And
right.
Now we're getting confirmation. So I think it's fascinating how that kind of worked, kind of backfired against them, releasing that then.
Yeah, I'm just surprised. You know, we had William Pullen on to discuss that specifically, and I was really just – a big point of that I was shocked by was the fact that the Pentagon was willing to come out and say, we don't know. You know, it seems like the military doesn't come out and just kind of volunteer information, and they certainly don't come out and volunteer stuff they don't know. You know, so I thought it was weird. I thought it was a weird admission, you know. I want to say they're prepping us to find something out, but man, how many times have we said that over the years? That wasn't the, you know. But I'd like to believe that they're prepping us for something, you know, and I don't mean, you know, laser beam wielding aliens, but I am pretty convinced that we're going to find fossilized life on Mars, which is going to show us that something's going on somewhere, you know.
That'd be dope. I think Mars is the next frontier, according to a lot of our tech billionaires who want to explore there. So,
yeah. I think possibly the most likely place that probably had life at some point would have been Venus, even though it just sort of went downhill quick. But it, from what we're guessing, Venus was close to us at some point. But I think I'm getting off the point here. So the new book that you wrote is, this one is more of a collection of conversations with people. You have a very eclectic group of people featured in this book.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not necessarily conversations, it's just more quotes. You know, like I have a journalism background. So when I write, I like to write very quote heavy. I like to, you know, get other people's perspectives and their expertise, as well as, you know, kind of put my own views in there too. And this book, I really wanted to just kind of, you know, not just talk to UFO people. I wanted to talk to people who are involved in Hollywood, who are making some of these TV shows and some of these films. I wanted to talk to scholars, you know, people who are academics who study this stuff. I wanted to talk to doctors and scientists and people who study UFOs and other journalists, including Leslie King and Ralph Blumenthal. They did the New York Times story. I was able to talk to them. I was able to talk briefly to Tom DeLonge as well to get his quote in there. So I really wanted it to be a really pull from a bunch of diverse groups. You know, I didn't want it just to be a UFO book. I wanted to really cover a lot of different topics, even people like involved in pop culture too. You know, I just said some of the people who produce some of these TV shows and these movies, and as well as I got one of the artists who works for DC Comics. He's part of the creative process too. So really just to pull in everything that I was going for in the book, because the book is really trying to normalize the idea of paranormal to everyone, not just us, but it's the everyday folks. So when they pick up the book and they read it, and then maybe they watch a Marvel movie, and they say, oh, wait a minute, this comes from somewhere. I read about this in history class or something. So that's the goal, to kind of normalize it. So I think definitely having this, you know, diverse palette of people to kind of interview and get quotes from, I think that definitely helps for sure.
So these weren't necessarily people with, I mean, obviously some of the names I recognize as being people very associated with paranormal, but a lot of the names are not associated with paranormal on the red, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, the people who work for DC Comics, David Marquez, he's one of the artists for there. I've known him since I went to high school. We went to high school together. I mean, he has a great perspective in terms of how, I mean, as an artist, but he's also part of the creative process too. So he has a great perspective of how our modern day pop culture really imitates mythology and potential true life events. So getting his perspective is important. And also a guy who does a podcast on Superman, a guy named Zach Morris called Always Hunt on the Smallville. He's a Superman historian as well. So it's good to pull from those aspects, as well as, you know, some of these producers who produce, you know, shows for CW and A&E in history, who aren't necessarily paranormal buffs, but they see the value in producing these shows. So they may not know, you know, all the big cases or, you know, like that we do, but they see the value and they see the importance of producing these types of programs. So it's good to sometimes to kind of, you know, get those perspectives as well, because it's, you know, not just be a book with a bunch of, you know, insider, you know, stuff from people like us, you know, that we're used to reading.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
So David Marquez, his name is most associated with the Ultimates Universe Spider-Man. So what was his take on it? You know, when you come at somebody without a background in this and you say, hey, I want to quote you in my book that's about something that you're not even about, you know, what's the DC Comics guy take on this?
So it's interesting because I draw a lot of parallels from comic book characters and current pop culture to mythology and real life events. So one of the points I make in the book is like Thor, right? Mm-hmm. Thor was a god believed for, you know, in many, many nations to exist. There's still statues to this day of him, as well. So the idea of Thor comes from somewhere, you know, was he really the god of thunder? Like, you know, was, who knows, but, the idea came from something potentially true. And I kind of made the point that a lot of these myths live on today through pop culture, you know, through movies, comic books, et cetera. So when I was talking to David Marquez, he's doing the Batman Superman, series. He did the art in the first six issues, which is their first big story arc. And that storyline is dealing with the Batman Who Laughs. So it's basically the idea of an evil god, right? And these are things we've seen in religious texts and various folklore mythology, this idea of an evil god or an evil deity. And I mean, that's playing through in our popular culture today, and you see it all the time. So to get somebody like him, who's also savvy enough, too, to also connect it to the past, I think is important. So you say, oh, this isn't someone who's just an artist. He understands the background that the writers and the creative team that they pull from to kind of craft these modern stories that, you know, the kids and adults are reading all the time.
Right. Man, I didn't know that he worked on that whole dark multiverse thing, the Barbatos and all that. Yeah, that whole series.
The first six issues, which was really good. I want to read the rest of them when they come out in paperback. But
yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised how good it was. Because the reviews were kind of so-so, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's amazing when somebody can breathe some life into something that's 70 years old or 80 years old or something like that. You know, when it came to the for lack of a better word, I know I need to get a better word because I find this word kind of silly. But when it came to the mainstream journalists, and for those listening and not watching, I air quoted that. And also, if you know a better word for mainstream, I'm happy to use it. But what was their take on it when you brought it to them? You know, how do you deliver that to? Because I'm sure they get a lot of it, and they get a lot of it from probably people that they consider to be wacko. You know, so you know when you brought it to them, you know, how did you sell this? Like, hey, I want to associate your name with this, because historically speaking, the argument against UFOs being in any sort of media and stuff like that has been that it's career suicide, that it's, you know, make you look like a fool, that so on and so forth, you know, did you get any pushback from it, or did you find that people are just kind of all on board now?
I think everyone's all on board. Ralph Blumenthal is someone I've been in contact with for years, and the first time I interviewed him, the first story we did, he said, like, the New York Times, it was, like, lighting up their website and their emails. It was the most read story of the day every time they'd done those Pentagon UFO stories. So for them, I mean, they're not doing these stories all the time, but, you know, I used to work at a mainstream newspaper, too, so I kind of know how it works. You can't just go out and write whatever you want. So, obviously, the editors have to be on board, too. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you know, they have to heavily vet everyone they interview, just like they would, you know, any, like, hard news story. So the fact that, you know, the editors took it seriously, too, I think that speaks volumes of kind of like where we're at, where we're potentially going. And Leslie Kane is another great example because she worked on those stories, too. But she's also someone, you know, for people who don't know, she wrote this book, this groundbreaking book on UFOs, where she got military officials from all over the world to speak on record. And her second book is about near-death experiences. It's called Surviving Death. And I met her last year in Houston, and that's what she was doing a presentation on. I was like, hey, I'd love to interview you for my website. I'm doing this book. And she's just a great example because if you think about, you know, somebody writing about near-death experiences and ectoplasm and all these things that you think would be associated with, like, Ghostbusters, right?
Right.
I mean, this is a New York Times journalist who's doing this. So, obviously, you know, she's courageous and she's willing to potentially put her neck on the line writing about these topics that to many people are weird. You know, like years ago, I probably would have dismissed something like that. But, you know, you grow and you evolve. You know, you read more and you think, oh, well, you know what, maybe this is possible. And I think she does a great job. I mean, she's one of the best mainstream journalists out there who is interested in this topic. And I was saying, you know, to her, just in general, it's like, look, her trajectory is very symbiotic of the trajectory of UFOs right now. It went from give me the hard, you know, the hard evidence to now it's more towards consciousness and all these more like, you know, new age ideas. And that's kind of where ufology is going. And so for her investigating now near death experiences and some of these other phenomena, I think that's definitely a logical path.
Yeah, it was interesting what you were saying about media and editors and their website blowing up because of this, because it makes me think that the internet is probably a bit of a double-edged sword when it comes to this, that, you know, half of it is creating a world where news stories are shoved under the rug because nobody cares, because it's not getting clicks. But half of it is also creating a situation maybe where topics that normally wouldn't be brought to light are being brought to light because you have the data to show that people are interested.
Yeah, like you hit the nail on the head. Like, you know, when I worked at a newspaper, part of my job was working on the web. And we would have, like, these hard news stories up, and we would see how they performed in real time. And at times, it's like, man, no one's reading this. So we were forced to kind of move it around or take it off this top spot and then put in something, like, ridiculous, like a photo gallery in its place because it would do better clicks. But, you know, like, on the flip side, you know, like you were saying, you know, some of these stories, especially, like, the UFO stories, maybe that's something they didn't expect to click well, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wow, it's blowing up on the web, and it's, you know, we're getting, you know, a lot of requests for more stories. So, yeah, I think it's definitely interesting to see that, you know, people are interested in this topic, and we're getting follow-ups. Even though these stories have been, like, well, I think the first two stories were, like, a year apart, I think that still says something that, you know, the New York Times is still investing in these Pentagon UFO stories for sure.
Yeah, when I complain about the lack of coverage, my biggest, I watch the nightly news every night, 6 o'clock, whatever, the national news. And I assume that's where most people get their non-social media news, is from some sort of thing like that. And I was just really surprised that people were not more concerned about the fact that the military didn't know what something was, but I guess we're not living in a day and age where the military is really running under the favorable light that it maybe ran under in the past.
Possibly, yeah. But yeah, you're right. I never thought of it from that aspect that there was never a reaction where, oh, the military doesn't know what it is? Oh, okay. You know, like you said, everyone's just kind of okay with it. And I never thought about it like that. Like, why aren't people kind of more, not concerned, but, you know, why isn't there more of a pushback on that? Like, oh, they're bad, you know?
Right, yeah, because if it was the Russians and we knew it was the Russians, people would be interested. people would want to know, like, why is this being allowed, you know?
And I think it's why a lot of people are interested in it, like, let's get these clicks, because these are highly trained pilots and professionals, you know, who have seen this stuff, and they know what to look for. They know, you know, how certain missiles and planes and vehicles operate. So when they're saying, look, this defied anything that we know of, you know, they know what to look for on the radar. They know what's a bird, what's a bug. They know what's an aircraft. So I think it's fascinating that we have these people on the record while still employed by the military able to do so, which is another interesting aspect too, how some of them have been able to talk.
Right.
Which is a good thing for us.
Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hey, Redding, what's better than an ooey-gooey cheesy sandwich? How about five different ooey-gooey cheesy sandwiches? Black Bear Diner just launched their limited-time ooey-gooey cheesy choices that'll cover you for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Come on in and try one of those delicious sandwiches today.
Black Bear Diner.
Hey there, Marty Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. Mimi and I have moved our tasting room back downtown to the corner of Pine and Butte Street across from Corbett's and the Reading Chamber of Commerce. We're open Wednesdays through Sundays from 3 to 7 p.m. and Fridays till 9 p.m. While you're here, enjoy food from the Hearth Kitchen and Pie Shop and munch on some delicious handmade chocolates by Nanette de Chocolate. Come on down and enjoy life with us, Mosley Family Cellars at the historic Thompson House. Come as guests and leave as family.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
As we go on with science, we definitely realize that and again, this might go back to what you were saying about what you learned from writing these books, is that what you really learn is that you were asking the wrong questions all along because you didn't even know that this question was possible to be asked, much less answered. You know, and so along the way, you end up through science or whatever, finding out like, okay, well, some kind of portal is possible or something like that, you know. I don't know. It is mind-blowing, though. Cool. We'll definitely tie your brain up in knots. You know, in the past couple of years, let's go back a little bit further than that. But, you know, what would you say outside of this Navy UFO thing, you know, what would you say that the paranormal story or report that you heard that most made you go, this might actually be something was, you know, what was the one? Because surely along the way, as you research, you know, just like with anything else, life gets boring, stuff like that. You get reinvigorated along the way. You know, what was your most recent, like, reinvigoration where you're just all like, that's why I do this?
Recently? Oh, man, that's a great question. It's weird because it's easy to get burned out. Like, the people who've been doing this for 15, 20 years, it's like, I mean, a lot of them, it's a hobby, and it's a hobby that doesn't necessarily always yield results or notoriety or money, you know? So it does take up a lot of time, and I feel like, for, like I said, people have been doing this forever. Mm-hmm. You know, they have things to show for it, but it's like, you know, you're not solving Roswell or Rendlesham, you know, you're just kind of maybe introducing some new ideas to it. So it's like, I could definitely see it. It's daunting, you know, it's not easy, but you know, sometimes people get consumed by it. And sometimes it's easy to jump back in and there's something really exciting. For me, writing this book is exciting because there's something different. It's not just a traditional UFO book. Yes, I pull from, you know, some of the more current events like the Pentagon and the Navy UFOs, but I also connect that to some popular culture as well. But you know, kind of going back to the first part of your question, when I was first getting into this stuff, one of the first books I was drawn to was The Day After Roswell, because Roswell was always interesting to me. I was like, oh, it was like the birthplace for a lot of UFO people getting into this stuff. So I was always like, well, where do we go from here? And I think this book does a great job of, for those who don't know, it was written by Phil Corso, who the former Pentagon official, and he claims to have taken the crash retrieval from Roswell and then take the tech and sell it to private companies who would then come up with some technological innovations. And the book is really compelling. It was very compelling because he makes the case that this is true. So for me, that was fascinating because it almost reads like you're this spy movie. It almost seems like this is, you know, how he was, everything was, you know, undercover, and he had to take this foreign tech, you know, to other companies. You know, they're probably thinking it was from Russia or China, having no idea where it originated from. But then you see all the advancements of technology through the years that could be linked to that. So for me, that was something that when I was, you know, getting into UFOs, and I think that book really reinvigorated the interest of some of the older cases. It was like, wow, this is definitely taking it to, you know, where, you know, just beyond, okay, there's a crash of Roswell.
Yeah, the thing about Roswell that really kind of blows my mind the most is the fact that they admitted it at first, and then they come around, and then they, you know, so I'm just all, why would anybody admit this, you know? Yeah. And that's the part that definitely makes me say, well, there's something more going on here, and I don't know what it is, you know. It might be military incompetence, but they sure picked a weird way to cover it up, you know.
Yeah.
A way that for 70 years they've been arguing some weather balloon or something like that, you know. So I agree with you. That one has its staying power for good reason. So, you know, you say you like trilogies. Nobody liked Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Do you got a fourth one coming?
Hey, I like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I did too.
I loved it.
Think about it. If you're in, I mean, the alien aside, but the Crystal Skull is something that is in it's in mythologies and other cultures, but it's also tied to the UFO phenomenon as well. So that is so rad that that they did that. But I mean, those producers aren't, you know, they don't shy away from these things. Like, who did Spielberg did Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah.
He also did.
Spielberg directed and Lucas produced.
Yeah. So then you also have E.T. and then you have all these other films that they've done in the past too. So They're definitely savvy when it comes to incorporating some of these phenomena in popular culture films, for sure. Will there be a fourth book? I don't know about this topic. I feel like I've written some, like, what else am I going to say at this point? You know, like, this book is drastically different than so many other books that are out there. But I mean, who knows? You know, like, this stuff, sometimes you can get burned out, and then other times you just jump right in and want to, you know, keep digging and investigating. So who knows? But I think for now, I think saying it's a trilogy is kind of cool, I guess.
Right, and plus you're caught up in the completion, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You want it to kind of come full circle. You want to, like, end up in a good note.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for being on the show. It's always a lot of fun to have you on, and I definitely like having somebody on that I can banter some pop culture with because, you know, that's my gig. I do love me some pop culture.
Absolutely. Like, thank you again for having me on. I love going on the show, and you guys do a great job. So thank you again. I appreciate all y'all have done for me.
Yep.
I just have it the past couple of years. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And anytime you're interested or got something new to talk about, give us a call, and we are ready to have you.
Any day, anytime.
And actually, before we go, I should probably get the business out of the way. I almost forgot. You know, where can people find this book? Where's the best place for you to find them? Sometimes authors, it's better for them to sell them via their own site. Sometimes not. I don't know.
So it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's website in Kindle and print formats. You go to my website, to punkrockufos.com. There's the links to buy the book. But, yeah, no, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, I think, are probably the people use the most these days. But, you know, it's under Beyond the Fray Publishing, put it out. And they're putting out so many rad paranormal books right now. And they have so much really cool stuff in the pipeline. Some of the authors are going to be working with. And just they're spitting out books. Like, it's crazy how many books they put out already and how many books are coming out. So, kudos to my publishers, Shannon and Jeff. They're awesome. They work really hard, really hard. And they have a lot of show for already. You know, like I said, they just started this imprint probably less than 6 months ago, and they already have made four books. I think mine's the fifth one. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. That's how it starts. We go back to your house. You check the charts. Try to figure it out. And if it's crowded, all the better. Cause we know we're gonna be a plane. But if you're worried about the weather, then you picked the wrong place to stay.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.